welcome back to another episode of My Neighbors Are Dead. I'm your host, Adam Peacock, and we're all familiar with the big names in horror. Freddy, Jason, the Spectre Moose of Northern Maine. But who we're not familiar with are the ones just outside the terror, the ones who didn't get to tell their tales. And helping me do that this week, the host of the Make My Day podcast and writer-producer on Desus and Mero on Showtime, give it up for Josh Gondelman. Josh, how are you?
I'm doing all right, thanks. How are you?
Good, man. Thank you for doing this.
Oh, my pleasure. Love to chat. Thank you for having me.
The movie that you picked that we're going to do is The Shining. So let me start with that. Why did you pick that movie?
So I have a pretty limited horror repertoire. And I saw The Shining in high school. And I shied away from a lot of horror. But this one I saw, like, I was like at a sleepover with friends. And they're like, hey, we're watching this. And I was like, I will also watch this. And it's good. And I liked it. And it's like, I feel very culturally relevant and resonant. Yeah. So that's where I'm at.
Was this one that you had heard about before? Because I feel like there's certain movies that before you'd seen them as a kid, specifically horror ones that were like outliers.
100%.
So this was something you had heard of.
Yeah, totally. I think I knew. Well, it's one of those things where like I'm of an age where I watched a lot of Simpsons when I was in elementary school, middle school, and beyond. Yeah. And so I absorbed a lot of stuff, Simpsons first, and then like backed into the real thing. And there is one of the great Treehouse of Horror episodes, The Shining. Groundskeeper Willie says, do you want us to get sued? And excuse my accent, but I think that primed me for this. Like I kind of knew broad beats of some of it going into it.
I was talking to another, because my wife and I, she had never seen Goodfellas, and we're trying to go through and like kind of check off all the like AFI films or like, you know, culturally like important films. And the scene with Pesci, you think I'm funny how,
yeah,
that
funny
scene.
How. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That was another scene I had seen previous to that being made fun of. And I don't know if it was on SNL or if it was The Simpsons or something, but I had known about that before I had seen the movie.
All over, that one was all over the place. Like I remember, like when I was young, I was a big Animaniacs fan, and they had that recurring segment, the Goodfeathers, who were pigeon mobsters in the mold of Goodfellas. And like, there was no possible way I could have been familiar with the source material, you know, because this was like, my guess is like 95, 96. And so I was 10, 11 years old. And like, Goodfellas was only, when was it? 91?
Like, I think that's right. Yeah.
So there's just no way I would have seen Goodfellas.
Yeah, the first time I saw it, you and I might have had the same reaction where I was like, that's like that show. They're doing that show. Yes, that's already been done. Yeah.
Yep. And it's hard to know. I think that's such a funny thing about being a kid is you see all this stuff kind of like parodied and mimicked in what is, I mean, with Animaniacs, it was children's entertainment. And for The Simpsons, not children's entertainment, but like it was something I certainly watched as a kid. And then you see the like fully grown up version of it, you know, oh, that's what that was. And you like, I'm almost like in some instances, I'm like, how did I think that was funny before I knew what it was parodying?
Right. Every year, because it always, I feel like it came out after Halloween, right? The Treehouse of Horror.
Yeah.
It always came out like the week before Thanksgiving, I feel.
Yeah,
like.
That sounds right.
And that was something to look forward to every year.
Loved it. And then similarly, I was like a Mad Magazine reader as a kid, and that you kind of get the same thing. But that was more direct, right? Where the parodies were like beat for beat dead on. It wasn't like mapping them onto characters you already know in a way where you could watch Simpsons episodes. Like there's an episode based on Rear Window, and you could watch that and never know that Rear Window was a movie, or you could just watch that and be like, oh, this happened to Bart Simpson. But like Mad Magazine, the parody was like, you know, it would have been called like, some pun title. And then you would have been like, oh, this is this, and it's contemporary and that kind of thing.
Not horror. I guess it is horror related because of Treehouse of Horror, but because you're talking about it and I am a stupid dork and I get excited about it. How important was and are The Simpsons to you?
Hugely important. When it started as its own show, right, having been spun off from Tracy Ullman, I think there was kind of this I don't think people talk about it this much, but there was like almost like a panic, a moral panic about how rude Bart Simpson was. And so first I was not allowed to watch it. And then like by season two or three, I think my parents had kind of relented. Like they were like, okay, you're old enough or whatever. And and I watched it faithfully. I would watch the reruns at 7:30 on Fox, like after dinner. I would watch every Sunday. Yeah, huge. I mean, like, I can't imagine a world in which I did not watch The Simpsons, especially in those years, like up through middle school.
Too comedically important. My buddy Jeremy and I, every Sunday, I think it aired at 8 in Michigan. And every Sunday at 8:30, he and I would immediately call each other asking if we'd watch it, knowing full well we had just watched it.
Of course.
Then we would proceed to talk about nothing but The Simpsons Monday morning before school.
That's, I was just talking with, on my podcast with Chris Gethard about the kind of phenomenon of like calling someone to be like, did you see this thing that was just on TV? Or like, hey, this movie is on this channel is something he brought up. And like, I really like that. And another friend of mine yesterday just in a text message. She was like, I wish that streaming shows dropped at a reliable time of the day when I would want to watch it, so that like people who want to watch it right when it comes out and like have that monoculture experience could have that with like, oh, there's a new Ted Lasso this week, right? Instead of like it coming out at whatever midnight or 3 a.m. on Thursday night going into Friday morning.
Right.
It, like, okay, 6 p.m. on Friday evening, it comes out and people who want to watch it can watch it.
We were talking about that with when The Mandalorian first came out and they were dropping every week, and how much I had forgotten how much I enjoyed like theorizing through the whole week with my buddies and getting into arguments with my buddies about what was going to happen. And, you know, I forgot how much I'd missed that.
I love it so much. And I think it's like a really fun, like, and certain shows that are still like broadcast linear, right? You occasionally get it, like Game of Thrones, I think, is a memorable recent one. And you sometimes get it with like sports, but I wish it happened more. Like, I just would love more opportunity to like enjoy a thing at the same time as other people and talk about it. And like, you know, occasionally like a prestige limited series will have it. Like, I remember people having this experience with like The Undoing and Mare of Easttown, but it's not the same as like, oh, I'm gonna watch this every week at its appointed time, like 13 to 23 weeks a year.
right. My wife and I were doing that with White Lotus right now, but we know we only have like 2 weeks left, so
exactly.
Are you watching that show?
Yes, we're a little bit behind.
Do you like it?
I do like it, but I find it, I know it's the stakes for many of the characters are like fairly low, but I find it like kind of low grade stressful in a way that I have to like psych myself up to watch it.
I'm very upset after every episode.
Yeah.
I just like don't like the way I'm very bothered.
I just hate like the way people act towards each other. Generally. Like, I just, like, they do such a nice job. I think this is a success of the show. Like, I'm not being like, oh, this stupid show makes people be mean. I'm like,
totally.
It just, like, is skin crawling. Like, the way Jake Lacy's character treats the employees at their resort. And the way that, like, the teenagers kind of treat their parents or the women in their late teens, early 20s and treat their poor brother. Or one of their poor brother. And it just is like such a, it just is so, some of them, it just really feels like, oh, I've seen this. I've like been a part of an uncomfortable interaction like this. And it is like really squirmy to watch.
It's, and Murray Bartlett, fantastic. Anybody who's worked, I think, in customer service will relate to him.
Yes.
A friend of mine works at a hotel now and he loves the show. He loves him specifically. So The Shining, you'd watch that at a birthday party or a sleepover?
Just like a bunch of, it was either middle school or high school, probably middle school. I think we were sleeping over less than high school, but like, just like, hey, we're all staying at Brian's house or whatever. And so, it was one of those. And it was,
was that the first one you had seen or had another horror movie experience before that?
I think the first horror movie, I'm trying to think, cause I've total seen very few, but I think the first horror movie I saw was like as a tween someone, a friend of mine, a similar sleepover situation, had rented, like, I think it was Tales from the Hood, which itself is a parody, right? It's like a Tales from the Crypt parody, like blaxploitation horror parody,
I
guess.
It's the version of it,
Yeah. So that was probably like the first horror movie I saw. And I remember very little of it. But yeah, that one for sure.
I remember the ending being, oh God, the actor's name escapes me and that's terrible, but he turns into a really cool demon at the end of it.
Yeah.
You know what I'm talking about? I can't remember that guy's name, and he's been in everything. He shows up all the time. Mm-hmm. So The Shining, I love The Shining. Did you read any King, Stephen King?
Yes. So that's the thing about me is I had like a real Stephen King kick in like, again, probably middle school, high school. So I've read, the standouts for me are Green Mile, I read it after it was all compiled as one thing because it came out as like six short books,
like novelettes, right? Or whatever.
And then Needful Things and It, both of which I really liked and was afraid of, but thought both of those kind of like fell apart at the very end.
Yeah. It, I was just talking to somebody again about It the other day and how the ending is just very, what the fuck?
Yeah. And it's also like, it feels, I was just saying this recently, but because it came up on another friend's podcast, but I felt like it's such a he does such a good job of like setting up this idea of like the evil that is in the world, and like this thing is like an avatar for that evil and like kind of a fountain of it, but like the evil kind of permeates and you find it in unexpected places and it affects people in different ways and manifests in different ways. But then like at the end for the solution to be like a weird child group sex scene.
Very weird.
And then to also just like fight a giant spider. It feels like when the metaphor got like both too weird and abstract and too literal at the same time. And it's like, we've got to pick a lane, not to criticize the work of Stephen King, who very successful and knows what he's doing. But I feel like sometimes you get to the end of these epics that he wrote and you're just like, that's the answer. Come on, man.
Right. Reading that sequence in It, I was very, I'd heard about it before I'd read it.
Yes.
But reading it certainly is very, it's very, yeah. It's weird.
Yes. And you know what else? I read, I think I read all of it. I think it's Four Seasons, which was four novellas kind of put together. And that's where The Shawshank Redemption is from.
I read
that novella because that movie I'd seen, which is not horror, but is Stephen King. And I loved the movie and saw the movie before I read the book. And in the novella, it's so funny because I think the movie does such a nice job kind of like sanding, I mean, nice job in terms of like creating a neat narrative of like sanding off some of the rough edges where like with it's very clear in the book why Morgan Freeman's character is in jail and in the movie I think they're much more like oblique about it, but I think
it's
pretty
ambiguous, isn't it?
I think in the book it was like he'd cut the brake lines on his wife's lover's car and they both died in a car accident or something like that. I believe it was Red that did that. And then it's kind of like, oh, huh. And in
he's way more messed up than I thought he was.
Yeah. In the film it's kind of, you know, so many people obviously I'm not a big believer in like mass incarceration, and I believe in like the humanity of incarcerated people, but I do think they really like gloss over the like horrible violent crimes that the characters have committed.
He can get you anything, but also he killed two people by cutting the brake lines of their car.
I think that feels like, look, even if I don't think like prison is the answer for that, it still complicates my view of someone to know that they did that.
We still got to make good on this whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you're right. In the movie, it's pretty ambiguous, right? Like, it's something like murder or robbery or something. And don't you only see it in his rap sheet during one of the parole hearings or something?
Yeah.
Is that right?
But it's much more, I remember in the novella, it being much more foregrounded of like, yeah, this is what he did. Anyway, he's a pretty cool guy. Knows where to get a rock hammer and such.
Sounds good to me.
Yeah. Hey, you need a good rock hammer guy.
Absolutely. And so what if he killed two people? We all have pasts.
Yeah.
If you were like me, and if you were a pain in the ass like me, did watching The Shining change the way that you stayed at hotels?
Oh, interesting. That's a good question. I don't think it did, but I didn't have a lot of choices at that point. You know what I mean? Like, I saw it young, and I wasn't like booking hotels on my own. And so I think by the time I was like making my own hotel reservations and stuff, I was a little bit, it had kind of been ground out of me just by habit of like, I've been to enough of these and haven't gotten murdered.
See, I still do it. Anytime I check into a hotel, I'm not scared. I think I'm more appreciative of the creepiness of a hotel.
Oh, that's fun.
I don't know if that makes any sense, but
yes.
Yeah. Just like these big, almost kind of monstrosity things that almost seem like they shouldn't exist, but provide a function. I don't know. Yes. It's weird.
Right. You're like, this is so weird. That
yes.
This happens that mm-hmm. everyone, this is like part of the social contract that we all agree is fine.
Right.
Like kind of the limited scope of the hygiene that's possible and the just like weirdness of like, oh yeah, just new people every night. I stayed in, I had a gig in DC a couple of years ago, and they put me up at the Watergate Hotel, which that's pretty fun. Yeah. And it was really nice. It was like,
I bet.
Yeah. And I realized like, I kind of pictured it like when I got there, I was like, oh, this bar is really like new, the hotel bar, which I don't even think I went to. I just walked through it on the way to the elevators. And I was picturing it a little rundown because I was picturing it looking like a Nixon era hotel. You know what I mean?
Right, right. Yeah.
But,
yeah.
But it was like, of course, it was probably nice then if that's where they were. There were like RNC activities or DNC activities. They've renovated it since. So it's like, oh yeah, this is a nice hotel. I was truly picturing like a place, like a motel where I would picture like a break-in and a crime happening, like a motel with like doors facing the street. And so I saw in the, you know what I was honestly picturing was the motel near the end of No Country for Old Men where Javier Bardem, spoilers, kind of catches up with Josh Brolin. And so I was picturing that. I was like, oh yeah, a hotel where a crime happens. And then I got there and I was like, oh, this is lovely. And then I was like, why wouldn't it be nice?
Dude, that's funny. Cause yes, Eddie, I feel that same way. Cause I can't bring up an immediate picture in my head of what Watergate looks like, but I just assume that it's a crappy place.
Right. It feels more like I pictured like you see the scenes in the movie Dick and you're just like, oh yeah, but that's a period thing. And like, obviously they've renovated this hotel in the last 50 years.
Have you been to the White House?
I don't think I've been into the White House. I've been in front of it.
I got to go on a West Wing tour because I was in DC as well too, doing a show. And we got set up with a tour in the West Wing and we got to like peek our heads in the Oval Office. But sort of the opposite of that, where I think of the White House as like this beautiful, pristine, like immaculate, nothing's
grandiose,
wrong with it.
Stately.
Right.
Yeah.
And then you get there and like, oh, it's just a kind of a shitty old house that they just keep painting over. And like these couches in Obama's office are like, the pictures are nice, but when you look at them, they're all kind of faded and like,
oh, that's
like
so
got some
funny
wear and tear on them. It's kind of cool.
That's really funny. I like never considered it really, because like, you know that people live and work there, but I don't consider like, oh yeah, the wear and tear that people put on this.
I think when we were walking, because we'd walk by it all the time too. And like, I think I saw like a giant spider crawl across something. And I had that kind of the same thing. Like, oh, right. They do get bugs here too.
Yeah,
Why wouldn't they?
This is just a place.
Right. It's just a house like any other house that's just been retrofitted.
Yep. That's so funny.
Yeah, it was. And also DC is really hot too. So
very hot.
Well, Josh, I would love to keep talking about hotel experiences that we've had where we haven't been murdered, thankfully. But unfortunately, we do have to take a break. We have somebody coming in from, well, another hotel. It's a competitor to the Overlook. But Josh, we're going to take a quick break. And thank you so much for coming by.
Thank you for having me.
We'll be right back. Hey, neighbors, Adam here. Have you been enjoying My Neighbors Are Dead? Well, there are two quick and easy ways you can show your support that only take a second. First, leave us a rating and review in your podcast player of choice. That can be anything from talking about a recent episode to suggesting a film for a future guest. And two, make sure you're subscribed so you don't miss future episodes. It helps you, it helps us, and it helps new folks find the podcast. Thanks, and now back to the show. Welcome back. I am always excited when we get somebody here on the show who is an entrepreneur, somebody who really kind of, I keep saying it, makes lemonade out of lemons, and that's no different today. I am joined all the way from the Rocky Mountains in Colorado, Gordon Lewis. Gordon, thanks for joining me.
Hey, thank you so much, Adam. Thank you for having me. It is a pleasure to be here. Love your work.
thanks, buddy.
Yeah, no problem. Long time, first time. First time, long time? I don't remember how that says it.
They both work.
Yeah, they're the same.
They're the exact same.
They're the same. Yeah, people make too big a deal out of little things. People think too picky about little things. Well, thank you for having me. It is just such a joy to talk to you and to talk to your audience, because I think a lot of them would be really into what I have to offer.
Well, it's something that isn't a little thing. You are the, correct me if I'm wrong, if I'm mistaken, I'm sorry. You are the owner and proprietor of the Pine Tree Manor in Colorado. Is that
absolutely
correct?
Absolutely. Yes. Owner, proprietor. Sometimes if you catch me on a good day, I cook the breakfast. It is just this cozy 12-room bed and breakfast mm-hmm. that we have going on. And I think it's kind of the best thing going in the Rocky Mountains. It is close to skiing. It is close to hiking. Mm-hmm. It is, and look, this isn't my thing, but recreational cannabis, it's legal out here. You can come, have a good time. We've got a lot of Febreze on the premises. Mm-hmm. We make it nice for you.
I that all sounds great. I love Colorado. I love the Rockies. I love hospitality. And thank you. not to you know, throw a stick in the spokes, but your business is incredibly close to the Overlook Hotel. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's accurate. We're close to the Overlook, but mm-hmm. I like to think that what we offer in the wings of kind of homey touch, you know, again, homemade breakfasts. We have just like a cozy library. We have a Michelin star chef. Yeah. And we really try to make the accommodations comfortable. King bed in every room. And we put customer service first. And so, yeah, I mean, like, we're near the Overlook, but I don't consider them competition. You know what I mean? Because they kind of do a different thing. I don't think about the Overlook much at all. I don't think about the Overlook much at all.
Well, before we get into any of that,
I'm just saying, I can't. I wasn't going to talk about this, but you brought it up. Mm-hmm. The place is fucking full of ghosts.
Yeah.
And we're just, and their rooms, they're packed. They're getting snowed in, hundreds of people snowed in. We're struggling. Do you know most restaurants fail within their first year?
I have heard that, yeah.
I opened the Pine Tree Manor in December 2019. COVID hits in 2020. I'm under fucking water on this mortgage, man.
Well, let's tell people a little bit about Gordon Lewis. What got you into the business of hospitality? Because there's plenty of negative out there. There's the pandemic. There's the hotel full of ghosts. What is it about Pine
Tree
Manor and
Gordon? There's the creepy twins. I will tell you what. I don't even allow twins at my hotel on the off chance they'll be creepy twins. If you're a twin, of course you can stay at Pine Tree Manor. I'm not going to discriminate against a twin, but if it's both of you at once, some kind of family reunion or weird sibling getaway, no, thank you. You're going to weird out the other guests.
I don't think there's a single thing wrong with what you just said. And thank what I you. Like how you did it is that, Gordon, you made it. Yeah, you can both come, but you just can't come at the same time. I think you should extend that same policy to elderly folks who might work in the bar business.
Yeah, absolutely. 100% true. So how am I going? This isn't about the Overlook.
No.
I wish them nothing but the most success with their creepy murder hotel. Yeah. I just, maybe I should have picked a name with better SEO. I don't know what I'm doing wrong, but people keep going. You know what's not, look, you know what inspires me? What got me into this business?
Yeah, please tell me.
Just a real passion. My parents owned a little bed and breakfast in coastal Maine, in the Bar Harbor area. And
lovely.
Yeah, lovely. And I grew up working there. I grew up doing a little bit to maintain the grounds and, you know, doing a little of the sous chef work before I went to culinary school. And my parents retired. They've since moved down to the Palm Desert in California. And I wanted to be a little closer to them. Still wanted to stay in the industry. And in all my years, you know, I kind of traveled the country trying to see where there was a need for something like what I had to offer, where the clientele could support it, where learning skills, working at various places, various high-end hotels, and various mom and pops, because I wanted to have that homey touch. And you know what I've found people love is when you don't put an axe in the chest of your goddamn groundskeeper. People in most places love that, but in Colorado, oh, sign me up for the murder hotel. What the hell are people here thinking? Do you know how long I spent learning how to laminate croissants? 9 Wait, months of baking academy.
Wow.
In Paris.
I didn't even know that's something you could do with croissant.
You have to. It's how you get those fine layers of the dough on the inside.
That's amazing.
Yeah, thank you. I'm mostly a chef, but I do consider myself a fairly proficient baker. When I watch British Bake Off, and gosh, isn't that show nice? It's so soothing.
It's so good. It's I like so when soothing. People don't yell at each other and they just support each other's crafts.
I think that's really nice. I feel like I would thrive on that show. I feel like I would really do well because I want people to succeed. I want people to feel good. I want people to feel cared for. That's really something that I think is nice. What I don't look, what I'll tell you what I'm not going to do. I'm not going to, when you leave my hotel, your image isn't going to suddenly appear in a picture from decades before. Sure, that's just not going to happen. Yeah.
Yeah.
If that's the kind of supernatural touch you want at a hotel, I think that you're coming to the wrong place. But look, we're just doing our best. That's all.
I think it's lame that people would give up value and a local experience like the Pine Tree Manor to kind of have the novelty of staying in a murder hotel. And I would obviously, I never would condone murder of any kind, but.
Oh yeah. And anti-murder, if I didn't make that clear, I'm anti-hotel murder. I'm into anti-murder in a private home, murder on public land. I'm against all of it. Yeah.
Sure. Yeah, totally. And absolutely. I'm 1000% on the same page with you, but I don't know. I mean, I don't own a business, so I don't know what it would look like in terms of the integrity of your ownership of the business, but why not just start a rumor that you killed a bunch of people at the hotel?
I can't say I haven't considered it. It's definitely come up in meetings with the board of directors. Hey, why don't we just plant the seed? Maybe before we owned the property, there were some murders on the hotel.
Yeah,
and I said, no, I'm not going to play those games. This isn't an arms race of what hotel has had more grisly murders in it. That's not why I got into the hospitality business. I got into the hospitality business to make people feel good. And that's it.
I think there's really no other reason too. I mean, I think that, well, there are other reasons, but I think that's the best reason to get into it is because you do want to make people feel good. You want to share that sense of home and that sense of, kinship and closeness with strangers that they might not get anywhere else.
You know, this is something that I wanted in my first hospitality venture as well, which recently, closed in 2015 after a mixed kind of 7-year run. We called it the Hotel Southern California, and it was kind of a bungalows. You'd say little bungalows by the shore in San Diego. It was really cozy. Again, you could check in or out anytime you liked, and we would always let you leave. That was our promise. We wouldn't just hold you there against your will, kind of aging you and wearing away at the moral fabric of your soul. And it was, I learned a lot of lessons. I learned a lot of lessons from that. But I really thought we had kind of a special atmosphere going there.
It's something that I was saying at the top. I like when people come in and they own things and they have passion in them. And I feel like there's so much, when you stop to think about it, there's so many negatives for hotels. I mean, you got the Hotel California, you got the Overlook, you got Motel Hell, and still somehow you stay in the game. And I admire that. And I want to see that pay off for you.
It's been a struggle. I had to sell my teeth. I sold my teeth.
You sold all your teeth?
Oh, yeah.
They look great.
Sold all my teeth. Thank you. Sold all my teeth to, like, I don't know how else to say it, to a wealthy pervert. He just wanted used teeth.
That takes
used
time.
Adult teeth. He said baby teeth fall out on their own. That doesn't do it for him.
You know, I don't know if I don't do it, but there's an OnlyFans thing. And I think if you've learned anything, it's that if you're into something, there's people out there that are into it too.
Yeah. And look, again, I've tried that, but I only have one set of teeth. And that was really my principal appeal to these folks.
I'm curious, like, what does a complete set of human teeth go for? What is a pervert willing to pay for that?
I got 12 grand. I don't think it was the teeth he wanted. I think it was he wanted the video of the dentist extracting them. Sure. Honestly, I think for the bulk of the 12 grand was for the HD video of the dentist extracting my teeth. And
what did the fake set cost you?
Fake set was 9 grand. But I got another 3 grand for sending him the video of the dentist putting in the fake set.
Oh, so you're six. You're up 6 grand.
I'm up 6 grand.
Okay. That's great.
I am burning money at this hotel. I'm telling you, it is a bad scene. I've had people, you know what hurts? If a guest wants to stay at the Overlook, that's fine. Maybe they love the intrigue. They love kind of the scare factor. Who am I to yuck anyone's yum? But I had my lead director of hospitality leave me to work at the Overlook.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
That sucks.
I'm really hurt.
Sorry. I don't know what to do because this is just another example of big business stomping out the little guy.
Thank you.
Like, it's, and what is the answer? What do you do? How do you compete with something like that? I mean, you're not going to go like burn down the hotel, are you? Wait, you're not going to burn down the Overlook Hotel, are you?
Well, we can't divulge like all our brand strategy. We're working on a lot of innovative things in the hotel hospitality space. And what I can tell you we are going to do is, I'll tell you this, the Pine Tree Manor is going to be standing at the end of 2021. I gave up my teeth for it. I moved across the country for it.
Yeah.
We're gonna be there at the end of this year. And I hope people give us a shot. Am I going to burn down a competing hotel? Come on.
No, but theoretically, if you were to say hey, you won't get caught, Gordon. You will get away with this and it will increase your business. If like, oh, in you that mean, hypothetical. Yeah, you mean
if it was kind of the perfect crime.
Right. I mean, yeah, that, yeah.
If it's the perfect crime, you'd be a fool not to consider it. That's what makes it perfect.
I mean, I'm not a business owner, so it would be foolish of me to tell you what to do. But I think if you're going to get butts in those beds, I don't know that that's the worst idea.
Butts, backs, and bellies. I want the whole shebang in my bed. I don't want people just sitting on the end of it. I want them snoozing. And I'll tell you what, every room, king size bed, memory foam mattress, you're not going to sleep better than you sleep at the Pine Tree Manor. And you can sleep easy knowing that no one is going to come in and murder you in the night. And I know that my director of marketing explicitly told me to stop saying that because it gives people ideas. But I want to reiterate how true it is. You know how many, look, you know how many people we've had go slowly mad from the environs of our hotel and turn on their own family?
No one would know about you. I'm going to say zero.
Three. But you know how many successfully murdered even a single family member or staff member? Zero. We bring them back from the brink.
And you can't argue with results.
You can't argue. Well, apparently you can.
Well,
I would love if you could. I would love to say you can't argue with results. But here I am, mouth full of squirrel teeth. You might have noticed my teeth are very small.
I didn't want to say anything, but. Yeah.
They're from a squirrel. Well, they're from 3 to 5 squirrels.
Jesus.
Yeah. Well, their mouths are much smaller than our own. And some of them, when you get to them, they don't have a full set.
Sure. Yeah.
Munching on nuts the way they do.
And just living in trees. Yeah. I can't. That makes sense. Yeah.
I would love to say you can't argue with results, but apparently you can. And I will say I will do drastic things to make our customers feel safe and happy and to gain your business. There is almost nothing I wouldn't do.
And if you're listening to this, and if you're still not convinced that when you're in the Rocky Mountains in Colorado, if you don't want to stay at the Pine Tree Manor, you're a fool. You're just a fool. You're missing out on a great business. You're missing out on a great team. And
it's the just point where when people get murdered at the Overlook, I don't even feel bad anymore. I'm like, they brought this on them. You're not supposed to blame the victim, but I'm like, that's the whole reputation.
Right. I'm not into victim blaming either, but it is difficult to not kind of do it.
Mess with a bull, get the horns.
That's what I'm saying.
Stay at the Pine Tree Manor. You get a fresh squeezed orange juice. We import the oranges from Florida. High thread count sheets. I need this so badly.
Well, Gordon Lewis, I can tell you with absolute certainty, the next time I'm visiting the Rocky Mountains, I will stay at the Pine Tree Manor.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much. It's okay. Hey, it's my pleasure. I appreciate you coming by and talking to me.
Thank you so much.
It's all right. Well, Gordon Lewis, thanks for coming by. I look forward to spending some time at the Pine Tree Manor. And I think if you're in Colorado, you should do the same.
Thank you so much. Come on by. Call ahead. I'll have a fresh baked cookie ready for you.
Gordon Lewis, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you so much for listening to My Neighbors Are Dead. I've been your host, Adam Peacock. The show is produced by myself with Nate DeFort and edited by Nate DeFort. Original music was done by Jesse Case, along with Dane Halverson, and our original artwork was done by Mark Nishan. I want to thank Josh Gondelman for coming by and playing Gordon Lewis and telling us about the Pine Tree Manor. Again, if you're in Colorado, please stay there. If you want to know more about Josh, you can catch him on the Make My Day podcast and also on Showtime. He is the writer and producer of Desus and Mero. And if you're on Twitter or Instagram, you can check him out at Josh Gondelman. If you like the show and you want to support us, please like and subscribe. And if you'd like to donate to the show, you can find us on patreon.com at My Neighbors Are Dead. Follow us on Instagram at My Neighbors Are Dead and on Twitter at My Dead Neighbors. Again, thank you so much for listening to the show, and we'll see you next week.
Screw it, we're just gonna talk about comics.
Do you like comic books?
Do you like brothers?
Do you like brothers talking about comic books?
Then this is the podcast for you. Screw it. We're just going to talk about comics.
Will Hines and Kevin Hines, performers from the Upright Citizens Brigade Theater and actual brothers, talk about actual comic books they love, like Spider-Man, The Fantastic Four, and many more.
If you prefer your podcast to be about fictional people talking about fictional books, this isn't it. But otherwise...
Screw it. We're just going to talk about comics from Campfire Media.
Campfire.